is very close to a quarter of a megapound. Therefore, you got 500,000 pounds left over capable of fuel, passengers, luggage, and cargo. And I don't think a 747 Heavy goes much above 750, 800,000 pounds total. Over to you, John, KQRIW.
Okay, I could be wrong on the fuel load. I thought I read that somewhere. But I know the plane cannot take off and land with a full load. They have to dump the fuel. So that, there is a lot of fuel on that plane. It's a cavernous object.
Now, there are quite a number of aircraft that when they're really fully loaded, you can leave the runway, but you will not come back to the runway with that amount of weight on board. The landing gear can't take it, unless you made a super soft landing, and you can't depend on that. And if you fold up a landing gear, life gets complicated real fast. So there's a number of airplanes where you've got to dump quite a few pounds of fuel before you can come back to that runway. Great stuff. Want to go to another one, John? Or do you want to... By the way, did you get a chance to see... did any of you guys... Let's see, I gave it to Glenn, quite a few guys, John, this article about radio broadcast May 1922. There's 82 pages there, and I know, Don, well, you guys haven't seen the 82 pages, but when you start looking at what they thought was radio broadcast at that time and what equipment they're using and where they thought it was going to go, very well-written article. A very well-written, I'm going to call it a magazine, it's a journal. Some real big surprises in there. I wonder if you had a chance to see any of that yet, Glenn first, KC2QIQ.
K2YO.
Go ahead, Bernie.
Dick, I did read that article. Would you like for me to publish that with the TechNet stuff for tonight?
Yes, I do recommend that, so that if people go to bernie@huntfamily.org, I think it is, or is it type? I'm going to guess bernie@huntfamily.org. You will see the website that allows you to find this beautiful journal, 82 pages, very well written. It was the state of the art of radio, May 1982. And so when you read that, it'll be on Bernie's website. And Glenn, I wonder if you had a chance to see it. Some of that stuff in there, to me, was quite surprising. KC2QIQ, K2LIW.
It's a rather cute article. I haven't gone through all of it, but I love the part about Aladdin's lamp. Aladdin's lamp radio in the 20th century. Yeah, it's very interesting. I didn't get a chance to read all the way through it, but... it is a very nice article, for sure. Definitely goes back to, you can see, the original roots of radio.
And one of the articles, about six or seven articles downrange, the ads are kind of interesting. They're selling all kinds of wire and crystal detectors and coils that will give you a tuning of the antenna, and articles about almost everybody who built a radio set or used a radio set in their home at that time was using a 150 feet of wire in the backyard coming down into the radio itself, and a ground wire coming into the radio. I mean, because this was a crystal diode front end, and many of them didn't even have a vacuum tube, so that the crystal rectified the radio signal coming in and applied it directly to a set of sensitive earphones. And I could also tell that the so-called loudspeakers they used in those days had a lot of distortion to them and weren't very loud. Some of them, they complained about the fact that the loudspeaker would sound good on music, but would sound distorted on audio, on voice. And that amazed me, because to me there's a lot more frequency response in music than there is a human voice. But maybe the human voice was being overmodulated. And how many radio stations you can pack? Let me drop.
Dick, can I add another comment, if you're done?
Yeah, you sure can. How many radio stations you can pack, how close, is a big factor of whether or not some of those radio stations are using spark and taking up a whole lot of spectrum, as opposed to being a real oscillator with vacuum tubes. Broadcast, who is going to pay for it, the equipment itself, and the Armstrong regenerative tube that he patented and then sold the patent or gave the patent rights to quite a few companies. You can see how Armstrong got his. Quite a few of the experts in radio are described in that journal. Not a magazine, it's a journal. It's like the it is the equivalent of the IEEE proceedings of its day. In fact, it had some heavy connection with what became the National Bureau of Standards. You got it, Glenn. KC2QIQ, KQRIW.
One of the things that really struck me in one of those ads was the Jackson Battery Company ad. I always remember, you know, reading very old schematics where multiple, battery voltages were used, or voltages in a circuit, and they would always refer to, you know, the A voltage or the B voltage. And just seeing this article really clears it up. Storage batteries, the A battery and the B battery. So all that terminology where the B plus came from, that was the B battery, and the A voltage was the A battery. And actually seeing the pictures of those batteries really clears a lot of things up for me, because it was something I was never exposed to, and then finally seeing these batteries that were actually sold at the time, it really puts a solid picture to what they were talking about back then. So back to you, Dick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
K2YL.
Now, Bernie recognized, I think you can be right at the jaw. The A battery is the one that fed the filament, 6.0 volts roughly. The B battery is the one that fed the plates of the tubes. And occasionally there was a C battery which provided the control grid bias, the negative control grid bias for some tubes. Not very many had a C battery, but the A battery was filament, B battery was B plus for the tubes, and some of these batteries would brag about the fact that the battery doesn't create any sizzling sound that interferes with the radio reception. Some of these batteries, I think, were being used in the radio all the time. Some of the batteries were being used when you wanted to make the radio run portable, and they talked about charging networks for the batteries. Some of these batteries were rechargeable, particularly the Edison batteries were rechargeable. Over to you first, Bernie. K2IO, K2RIW.
One quick correction. Anybody that would like to access the documents with the TechNet, just send me an email. My call sign is K2YO, go to QRZ. My email there is good. My email is bernie@huntfamily.com. My name is Hunt, so bernie@huntfamily.com. Dick, what I thought was very curious is that in the article they complained about QRM and that they had interference problems, and they also complained about the disappointment that when they got on the radio and whoever they wanted to talk to wasn't there. So some things haven't changed.
There is a page that shows you what was then all of the Q signals, and there were lots of them, for the Morse code transmission. The whole Morse code alphabet and letters and punctuation is there. And a few of them have changed. Period used to be not da-da-da-da-da-da, it was did-it-did-it-did-it, was period. Comma right now is da-da-da-da-da-da. In those days it was something else. They've changed comma, they've changed question mark, they've changed period. So the punctuations have moved around. The letters and numbers have remained the same in the International Morse Code of May 1922 versus today. So that's some of the other things that are in there that are interesting to look at. So I wonder if you had a chance to see any of this, John. And also you can go to another email if you want to. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
Yes, Dick, I did look at that very interesting article. I did not know General Radio was in business at that time, because they had some sockets that they showed you also. But one thing that I gleaned from that was how the government was worried that the manufacturers of the radios were the same people who put up the transmitters. And they said they'll transmit and give all this beautiful entertainment until they've sold the product and saturated the market and go out. And they were looking to protect that investment that people were making, just like with the phonograph record and the phonograph, when the phonograph people who were manufacturing the unit also were pressing the record. So they said, you know, when they sell all of the phonographs and sell it, there won't be any new records available. But look what happened. So, and the same thing happened with radio. And you're right, they couldn't figure out advertisement. And even the government was using some of their stations for commercial advertising, just to fill up the space. It's an amazing article, very interesting. And actually, you got to read it a couple of times because there's a lot of things that you pass over without reading. But thanks for sending that over. Very good.
Yeah, that article got passed around by somebody who works at National Association of Broadcasters, and he added it to the list of things that you can look at for the people who are on the microwave reflector, the WA1MBA microwave reflector group, which is about 400 people worldwide. And he said, this is off subject, but it does show you what the early days of radio were like, even though these are microwave people, you know, in V-band and W-band and millimeter wave and whatever. And they were talking about radio at 30 KC and 100 KC and 400 KC. By our current standards, really low frequencies. As I was reading that article about the financing, and they're really so darn worried about the market becoming saturated for radios, therefore the broadcaster will dry up and go away because he doesn't have any incentive anymore. I kept reading that saying, what about advertising? What about advertising? They never said it. They hadn't yet discovered that they could be selling soap and shaving cream and all kinds of other stuff, that there's money in that. In the case of the guys that were building Victrolas and records, at least you can get new artists that are recording new records, and you could sell the new records. And they weren't smart enough to realize that the people would be coming up with new kinds of entertainment that you're going to want to hear on broadcast. And so you're willing to put up with the advertisements in order to get the free entertainment. Over the air was free. The BBC charges everybody... Let me drop it. Charges everybody a tariff for their radios and televisions. In the United Kingdom, you pay a yearly tax for the number of black and white sets and the number of color sets that you've got in the house. And there are people going around trying to correct the errors in that taxation, because if you look at the early tax records, nobody had a color television set because it was a higher tax. Everybody had a black and white as far as what they claimed is concerned. And so I think the BBC tries to finance it all by a tax, but I'll bet you they've got advertisements on their four channels. I think the BBC has four channels.
Take care.
And then the satellite system gives them another 100 or so channels. Eric would know more about that. KE2EJ,
K2RIW. K2RIW, KE2EJ. Yeah, BBC 1, 2, 3, and 4 have a commercial. Just a fairly recent phenomenon. I think it's about 15 years now, or 18 years, something like that. What they used to do is they would go around with their truck. It's a division of the post office, actually. And they would listen to the sweep of the set, and based upon the sweep signal, you could determine whether it was color, black and white, and you could also know whether it was listening to BBC or any of the independents. And later on, when satellite came into being, they could also determine whether you were listening to a satellite channel or not, because they would have reference receivers and phase them up. A lot of people tried to get away with it for a lot of years, but if you're not receiving over the air, I think there's still some, you know, hubbub going on about that. But, you know, if you have a monitor going that's connected to a DVD player, they can't tax you. So, you know, that whole system is changed since the beginning of that stuff.
My buddy Kent, WA5VJV, just came back from the microwave roundtable that was held outside of London. It was held at the British Tel main facility, 20 miles away from London. Or did he say 20 minutes away from London? Or maybe he said 2 hours, I'm not sure. Anyhow, a medium distance away from London. Among the serious electronic enthusiasts who knew that the BBC was using a truck to go by their houses and listen to the LOs and whatever, a number of those guys were modifying the TV set so that the local oscillator was on a unnatural frequency, so that the monitoring truck would be no longer able to find out what channel they're listening to and so on. I don't think a well-shielded set radiates very much of the chrominance, 3.5 megs, to tell you you're listening to color television. And you can't tell what channel they're on.
We're listening to the 16 kilohertz.
Okay. So the phasing up of the 16 kilohertz of the horizontal sweep rate is what I think you're saying. But would they know to look for that, Eric, when the local oscillator was wrong? If the guy was smart enough to move the local oscillator to some other place as he modified the set, is there enough coherence in the sweep 16 kilohertz horizontal that you could tell the difference between a guy watching a video cassette recorder versus over-the-air broadcast, KE2EJ, K2RAW.
Now, that's the gray area where they've been having their arguments. I haven't spoken to my friend in England in about, I guess it's been a year now. He hasn't been well. That was a contention that, are you sure you're listening to the right signal? Because, in essence, the license applies to over the air. What they did, because back in the 70s when I was putting up dishes to my friends in the south of London, they hadn't gotten the idea yet that a downlink could require a license. Now, if you have a satellite receiver, when you get the satellite service, the license fee is built in. So, there's still a lot of arguments in terms of when it was VCRs. The VCRs they could tell right away because the time base was not very stable. The geometry of the tape changing, of course, makes the point speed change, and that's where the fast horizontal AFCs came into being. When people used their VCRs with the real old TV sets that had the flywheels for the oscillators, the sets would barely lock up. The pictures would wiggle left and right, split, and all kinds of weird things would happen. But as the Japanese started to make fast time constant oscillators for the horizontal, those problems went away. But yeah, it's still kind of a gray area for them.
KC2, QAQ.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much of that is really an issue anymore over there. Because, I mean, just like over here, there's so much cable vision and other services that all require decoding. So, like, if you're going to have satellite over there, whether you're going to have, regular cable vision anymore, they already know, how many TV sets and everything just because you're, subscribed to the service. So the amount of, TVs that are taxed outside that, I'm sure that maybe they do occasionally go around for that sort of thing, but I don't think it's as big an issue as it was before Cablevision really took hold over there. K2RAW, KC2QIQ.
Whether you realize it or not, Glenn, there's still more antennas than there are cable subscribers there.
Say that again, Eric. There are more what than what?
In England, which is not a very rich country, there's still more over-the-air reception than there is cable. Actually, our company Cablevision here has a big system in London.
Now, if I'm using a black and white set, and I'm watching BBC Channel 1, and the second set in the house is a color set watching BBC Channel 1, as long as the 3.5 megs is not radiated, the 16 KC horizontal sweep rate of those two is the same. So I'm not sure you'd be able to tell the difference between a color set and a monochrome set. What do you think, Eric?
The oscillators in their monochrome set, 16, 750. I know it in the U.S. We're 15, 750 and 15, 736 for color. Their system's a little different. Their step carrier is at 4.43, it's not at 3.58. But they don't have any more analog broadcast. They're all digital. So now everything really is locked to the crystal in the converter, like your little converter, Bob, whereas that the actual generation of the horizontal and the vertical is being done by a little sync generator inside your box. So that's another one of the arguments that they're having. So. But there's still more over-the-air stuff there than there is cable.
I hear you, but let me run this by again. Without a doubt, your horizontal sweep rate in the United States and probably in the United Kingdom, the horizontal sweep rate does change when the broadcast is color versus monochrome. But now if BBC number one is transmitting a color picture, and I receive it on a color television set, and my second set is a monochrome set listening to the exact same channel, I'm looking at the monochrome picture of a color broadcast. Wouldn't the monochrome set and the polychrome set both have the exact same sweep rate? KE2EJ, K2RAW.
The time is 12 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. net tonight at 8:30 W2VL repeater system.
K2RIW transmitting on 375. KEQEJ, K2RIW, go ahead, Eric. I hear you. Interesting. So, oh boy. Now, whenever you're trying to listen for a weak signal in the presence of very strong local transmitters, life gets complicated. Unless you've got an extremely good... The guys who have literally taken power transistors that are intended for a transmitter and use them as the low noise front end to make sure they don't run into overload. Bye-bye, Eric. K2RIW.
Good morning. Time is 12:10 a.m. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:20 a.m. Is the W2VL amateur radio repeater system. Good morning. Time is 12:30 a.m. W2VL repeater system. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Good morning. Time is 12:40 a.m.
Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Good morning. W2VL repeater system. Time is 1:45 a.m. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Good morning. Time is 1:55 a.m. Is the W2VL amateur radio repeater system. Next tonight at 8:30 W2VL repeater system. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 2:20 a.m. Good morning. This is the W2VL amateur radio repeater system. The time is 2:30 a.m. W2VL repeater system. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. The time is 2:40 a.m. Next tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL amateur radio repeater system. Next tonight at 8:30. W2VL repeater system. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Good morning. Time is 4:54 a.m. Good morning. The time is 5 a.m. Next tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL amateur radio repeater system. Good morning, W2VL repeater system. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. The time is 5:20 a.m. Good morning. Good morning. The time is 5:30 a.m. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System. W2VL Repeater System. Good morning. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL Repeater. Oh.